You know, I got to write a theme song for our show. You know, I just got to write a theme. You know how Uncle Don had this theme? Where he'd sing, hello, nephews, nieces mine, I'm glad to see you look so fine. How's Mama? How's Papa? But tell me first just how you are. On your radio, this is your uncle. I've got to, you know, I got to come up with a theme, you know, like good evening, slobs. Hello, losers. Hello, winners. Hello, everyone out there. How are you? How are you tonight? Yes, that's a good Tasty yeast is handy, dandy for your appetite. I am sorry, Perry, you fluffed it again once more. I'm serious, you know. You know, when all is said and done, I must say this. When all the dust settles, and I don't want this to sound like chauvinism, but it is true. When all is said and done, we really do have a wild, fascinating, great gang here at this station. Have you know, isn't that true, Tony? I mean, you know, you can be so close, you can be so involved in the woods, you never see the trees. But not every station has a bare faba. They just don't, you know. It's a good thing, but they don't. And not every station has a Joe Franklin. Joe comes in here with the biggest collection of Broken Town Broadway types. Have you ever seen them? Trailing press clippings from the gaieties of 1919 behind them. And not every radio station has a Peggine Fitzgerald who goes to bed at night and dreams of flying squirrels. You know? That's and old Uncle Ed goes to bed at night and dreams of old Fitzgerald. You know, so I'm serious. And not every station has a John Gambling Jr., you know, who while he's doing a show sits and clips coupons and between records talks to his, you know, his broker. This is a great bunch. And Martha, are you Marion? I'll tell you, she's something else again. If Marion hadn't gone straight at the right time, Marion could have been a great stripper. You realize that, Tony? I mean, she's got... Yeah, she's got all, you know, it's all there, you know. But nevertheless, we got to get back to, you know, our series. Shall we clear the deck here, clear the atmosphere? Tony, please, bring it in higher there, bring it in there. Deck cleared. Okay, very good. Now, you reset that. We may need that later on. I've got a couple of little things here that I'm going to have to take care of before we get the show started here. A kid writes and he says, Shepherd, I have one request. The kid writes, he says, one request. Could you tell about, listen to this one, Tony. He says, could you tell about all the girls in your life starting with kindergarten? Starting with kindergarten? I don't know what kind of a kid this is. What kind of a kindergarten this kid? By the way, it was a girl who wrote this. I don't know what kind of a kindergarten this chick went to, but my kindergarten spent most of his time sitting up there knee-deep in sand in the sandbox, and the only girl that was really an active force in my kindergarten was a lady named Miss Bundy. Miss Bundy was made entirely out of pillows. So, you know, one of those large ladies with a sort of a loose dress, and she had sort of hanging down hair, all completely disheveled type lady, you know, the kind of ladies that that look like an unmade bed all the time. And she was great for kindergarten. She was a surrogate mother, and a true mother in the sense that she would sit there at the piano all the time, and we'd be down there in the sandbox. And I remember Miss Bundy playing. She would say, "Now, boys and girls," she's now, "boys and girls, come on now, let's go." And it would be, can you really remember going to kindergarten, Tony? Well, I, honest to God, remember being in kindergarten. I'm not inventing it. And the high point of kindergarten every day was they would pass out these little half-pint bottles of milk. And, the little cartons, the little ones, see. And straws. Well, now, I dug the idea of straws. Straws somehow were very festive. I don't know why kids think straws are festive, but that was a very special thing. Because at home, you know, you drink milk out of a glass. Now, my glasses, the glasses that I would drink milk out of usually had Skippy peanut butter written on the side or something like that. Yeah, my mother had a great collection of glasses that had contained shrimp cocktails, You know, the kind you get at the stores, Skippy peanut butter. We had a set of things called the good glasses. Now, the good glasses only came out on state occasions, Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas, a birthday for my grandmother when they would come over. But in the meantime, we drank out of jelly glasses. We really drank out of it. It said Ann Page raspberry jelly on the side. And always our glasses, my mother would take the label off, but you'd see little pieces of glue, you know, still on it. So that was drinking milk. But the high point every day in kindergarten came when we'd be down there in the sand pile, and there were all our kids. There was Glenn Atkinson. He's in the sand pile with me. Schwartz was there, and the Bruner, and the Flick. We're all down there knee-deep in the sand. Helen Weathers. None of us realizing, of course, because we were little squirts at that time. We were not even making true contact. Little did we realize, of course, that stretching ahead of us was this unbelievable phantasmagoria called life. Now, any of you kids that are listening tonight, and you're a kid, let's say you're 10 or 15. I'm going to tell you this, kid, right now, at this point in your life, you can't conceive, no matter how hard you guess, of the stuff that is going to happen to you in life. True, Tony? You just can't. There's no way of doing it. Impossible. Imps one. Totally impossible. Indeedimo. There is no way for you to guess, because who would have ever guessed when I'm sitting there knee-deep in crud, in sand, and I'm making a little hill, you know, the sand hill there, and Schwartz is over there. He's making a little car out of sand, and Helen Weathers is crying, and Miss Bundy is setting up the milk and getting ready to play America the Beautiful on the piano, and the walls are lined with our drawings, our classic drawings, like a witch or a pumpkin or a turkey or a Christmas tree or a farm. Kids are always drawing a farm with the sun hanging, with the moon and the sun, both of them looking down. You know, kids, boy, your kids bring everything together, you know. You draw the moon, then you draw the sun. I mean, after all, it's up there, too. And then you draw birds in the sky. You draw birds in the sky bigger than the house, you know, big birds. Well, nevertheless, how could any of us have guessed what was in store for us on that yellow brick road that lay ahead? I mean, I could have created. Kids are always writing to me, telling me what they're going to do when they grow up. I laugh because how could I have ever guessed that on that yellow brick road, somewhere along that line, I would find myself at 11 or 10:15 at night, talking to myself, following an Al Jolson record. How can you guess this thing? It's just impossible. It's totally impossible. I wouldn't have guessed it a year ago, but here it is. You know, there it is. Well, all right. So I'm sitting down there. I remember clearly kindergarten. Now, why do I remember kindergarten? Why, you know, I tell you, the reason some people can remember things and other people can't, motivation. Simple as that. Some people are just not motivated to remember it. And furthermore, it's what happened to you in the situation that makes you remember it. Now, if you spend a day and absolutely nothing happens, it's going to be hard to remember that day. But if during the middle of the afternoon you're walking along Fifth Avenue or 47th Street, when all of a sudden you're hit on the top of the head with a 15-pound kosher salami dropped from five stories above you, you're going to remember that day. That's as simple as that. You're just going to remember that day, the day you got hit with a salami, right? Well, all right. That's not a bad idea, come to think of it. You know, I saw a guy do a funny thing one day, though, like that. I often wonder what the upshot of it was, what finally happened. This is before you came here, Lee, and we were over there on the way over in the corner of the building. Now, remember, this building here is 24, 25, 26 stories high, right? Well, we were on the 23rd floor, and we were on the corner of the building there, and all the talent occupied a kind of a communal joint office. Well, the office was about, maybe 10 feet square. There were 120 of us in there, and we had this one desk, and we would take turns sitting at it. And it was funny, you know. And we had this one telephone. We'd take turns answering the phone and yelling and pretending like we got an office, you see. And there were all of us in there, Long John, the whole crowd. We were all in there, you see. Well, one day, it just so happened on this day, Tony, everybody was there at once. They, you know, they're all milling around and they're the whole crew. And when you get all the talent together, you've got yourself an interesting oleo of humanity, the various types. And shades. Some guys chewing gum. Other guys chewing tobacco. Other guys sitting on the floor. And we had our scurvy crowd here at that time. And so, if you remember, there was a pretty yeasty crowd at one point. Some of them were heavy drinkers. And if you remember, Tony, it was a very interesting crew. So it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I don't know why this happened. Don't ask me the genesis of it. It just is what happened. For some reason or other, there was a tray in there. And this was a big, one of these big plastic trays, the kind that restaurants use when they're catering something, and that big tray with sandwiches and all. Well, it was a big plastic tray. And on the tray, there must have been, maybe 150 ice-cold cheese blintzes. Now, why the hell they got 150 cheese blintzes, I don't know. There's a whole mess of them. It was a big pile of them. Well, I came into the office, and there they were, you see. So everybody in the talent department are born freebies. I don't know anybody in show business not a born freebie. I'll tell you, they're just freebies. So I came in there, and I said, gee, blintzes. So I rushed over, and I took one of the blintzes, and boy, were they ever rotten. They were not any cold, but I think somebody had sprayed them with DDT or something along the line because they tasted bad, and they were very limp and very bad blintzes. So I said, ugh, blintzes. So I put it down. Well, now, we had a couple of guys who didn't care how things tasted. As long as it was free, they ate it. And, you could give them a rubber hot dog, he'd eat that. You know, it was free, so he ate it, you know. So they're sitting there chomping down on these blintzes, and they're getting more bloated by the minute and turning green, and they'd rush out and run down to the men's room, and 10 minutes later they'd come back, start eating them again. You know, a real freebie never gives up. So we're sitting there with the blintzes, about 150 of them there, and it was hot in there too, you see. It was very hot. It was a warm summer day. And the blintzes around about 4 o'clock started to get gamey. They, you know, little green fur is growing on them, so... I'm just telling you the story. I might as well be honest with you what happened. Well, in walked an executive who shall go nameless. Now, there's always one executive in every organization who's a total ape on neatness. Now, this is the guy that he doesn't care whether the product the company turns out is rotten. He doesn't care whether the wheels fall off the widget that they're making. But what he wants to know is whether or not the mail room is neat, and that whether all letters are neat, that neat, he's got a neatness bit. So he walks into the office, and he says, what is that? And somebody says, well, they're blintzes. Where did they come from? You shouldn't have blintzes here. Don't you know they're Labrador cockroaches? Well, little did he realize he was talking to 38 cockroaches, human type, sitting around. You know, you don't badmouth cockroaches to a cockroach. So he says, well, Labrador roaches. And somebody says, what do you mean? You know, who's going to call me a roach? And he says, no, get rid of the blintzes. Just get rid of the blintzes. Well, I had been thinking that myself because there wasn't much room there, and these blintzes were a big tray of blintzes, and they're sitting on the radiator on top of everything else. It's hot in the place, and the blintzes are getting gamey. Well, and by the way, there was a pot of sour cream with it, see? And the sour cream, honest, had more hair on it than a porcupine. Just fantastic. So, the word had come, you know, get rid of the blintzes. With that, a talent who shall go unnamed, and that talent, by the way, is still laboring here at this radio station. No, it was not me. I'm sorry, it was not me. I must admit that I was not the one that did it, although I applauded. This talent takes the tray of blintzes. Now, you got it. There must have been 100 blintzes on this thing, and I mean a big stack of them. Where they came from, nobody knew. They were there that day. Nobody in the talent department knew. So he went over and he says, all right, get rid of the blintzes. Okay. And he reaches over, grabs the tray. We are on the 23rd floor. Remember, on the corner of the building. The window is open like 9 feet. He goes, whoop. Just like that. Whoop. And for one brief instant, I could see a cloud of blintzes hanging 23 stories above Broadway. They were like a flock of birds. And you could see the sun coming down through the blintzes. You see, it was like a flock of starlings hanging out the prince. The blintzes were turning over, and he had a trajectory on it, Tony. He didn't just dump them out. He went, whoop, and these babies flew out of the window, and they were heavy. Oh, these were heavy blintzes, you know. Each blintz went about 4 or 5 pounds apiece. Very heavy, specific gravity. He threw the blintzes out, and the blintzes went out maybe 20 feet out from the building, and you should have seen them. I looked out, all of us looked out like that, our heads stick out of the window, and you could see the blintzes spreading out. They had lift, of all things. The blintzes didn't just go down in a little mop. They spread out, and they must have spread out when, you know, something is dropping 23 stories. That's a long drop. And by that time, they must have covered a half a block. And I could see all these people walking around down there in their summer dresses. And, you know, I'll bet somewhere along the line, that moment is legendary in some people's home. The day that it rained blintzes on Broadway. I'm off the way. Speaking of that, reminds me, this is WOR, friends. Yeah, it's good old friendly New York.
TV Guide is profile, commentary, criticism, a continuing report on how the electronic medium shows and shapes our world. The current issue of TV Guide magazine profiles Doris Day. The image is sugar and spice and everything nice. The reality is more complex. Doris Day, up close. The cover story of the new issue of TV Guide. Then read Two Perspectives on America's Morals and Manners, The Business of Divorce, Hollywood Style, and Campus Unrest, a summary of how college activists relate to and use television. Just some of the articles worth reading this week in TV Guide. TV Guide, New York's biggest selling weekly magazine. America's biggest selling weekly magazine. TV Guide, on sale everywhere.
This is Mayor Lindsay shouting to you from Times Square. If you're having a problem hearing me, that's the problem. Ear pollution. 150 decibels of noise is enough to drive a man insane. And in Midtown New York, it's already at 77. Noise is our fault if we use steel garbage cans instead of plastic. And noise is our fault if we flare our radios or don't complain when somebody else flares theirs. I'm sorry if you're having a problem hearing me. Noise is our fault if we blow our car horn. Besides, that's against the law unless it's a matter of life or death. Just listen to the horn. It's a pain in the ear. If we don't cut down on all this racket, we're going to drive ourselves nuts.
I've often contemplated that moment. I've never told that story. Of course, it's just one of those incidents, but it's not quite the thing you tell about. But I've wondered about that. Yeah, can't you just see this guy walking down the street, and he's got his new Palm Beach suit on, all dressed up to the nines. He's with this chick, and they're in town. They've come because, you know, that's the big tourist season in summertime, and they're in town, and they're walking. Of all the places for the blintzes, this is the perfect place to be hit by 1,000 blintzes. If you know anything about where WOR is, right, Tony? So, I mean, there's some places it wouldn't have quite this significance. And here they are, they're walking down the street, and all of a sudden, ka-plop, ka-plop-o, plop-plop, all around. And he looks around, and she says, what's going on? He says, well, it must be raining. And with that plop, 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 three more blintzes hit. And I can see them describing it at home in Cleveland. Try to tell the people, well, you know, it's surprising what happens. And New York is a great place to visit, but blintzes. Well, I the one thing I do miss, though, is the sight of the sour cream. Now, as the sour cream left, you see, it was in a cardboard container. And as the sour cream left, the sour cream was heading towards 34th Street. Now, I don't know. No, I'm not inventing this. Now, this is the kind of life, you see, that... You could not predict this when you were a kid. Sitting in Miss Bundy's sandbox, I could not have predicted the golden blintz moment. Just like that. You just can't. Now, this is a program tonight, a little show we're doing here about life and its unpredictability, which we all know is a truism. And yet, a lot of people think life is predictable. They think life consists of getting up in the morning, going to work, coming home, sitting on your behind, and eating supper, looking at Lassie, and going to bed. Right? Well, there's a lot more than that. Did I tell you about the lady the other day that was sitting in front of her TV set? Did you see that news note? Sitting in front of the TV set there, and she's watching TV, when all of a sudden, a candle on top of her TV set burnt down, and it caught the TV set on fire. The TV set blew up, blew the chair right out from under her, and she broke both of her legs, and I'm not laughing at that. I just thought you ought to know that that was a golden moment in the age of color TV. It was a color set, in case you're interested. And, have you ever wondered about how they make those things, how that color TV set works, friends? You ever wondered how they can make that color? You don't know how it is, huh? There's paint in that set. Did you know that? I'm not going to say any more. I know a lot about electronics. And you can't argue with an electronics cuckoo, and that's exactly what I am. But there I am, sitting in the sandbox. And that high point of the day was after we had a little workout in the morning, we would start. See, the kindergarten that I was in worked two shifts. One group went in the morning, and we go home, and the other group went in the afternoon, right? You didn't go all day when you were in kindergarten. See, they break into school just kind of gently. And so I was in the morning shift. And me and Schwartz and Helen Weathers and the whole crowd, we went in the morning. And the afternoon shift seemed vaguely sinister and exotic. And somehow they got a different kind of kindergarten than we did. And I wonder how much that affects people's lives in later years. I don't think this ever comes up in a Freudian analysis, that you were assigned to the morning shift in kindergarten and other guys were assigned to the afternoon shift in the kindergarten. And from that day on, you always hated the morning, and hence you became a night person. I'm just curious. It could very well be, you know. And kids who only spent the afternoon in the school, the morning was a time of freedom. So they loved the morning. And they have become the guys, you know, the kind that get up bushy-tailed every morning at 5 and go out and water their lawn and all, you know, those cuckoos, you know, that type. Well, I wondered whether or not these things have anything to do with this. And so I'm sitting there in the morning at the kind of milky gray out, cold. Miss Bundy is dressed like a pillow. And she wore these flowered pink and blue dresses. And she would sit at the piano. And the first thing we did in the morning was say, "I pledge allegiance to the flag and the United States for which it stands. One nation, and blah, 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 blah." And then we would do this. And if we were a very patriotic school, Warren G. Harding, and, of course, a very patriotic, great president, and that we would sit then in the sandbox. You'd say, "All right, now do whatever you want for a while and try to think of something you want to make out of the sands." It was a creative teacher. And so I would sit down and make things. I remember one time Alex Joshua making stuff out of sand, and it was so terrible that Miss Bundy, she came over and, you know, she had to just roll that sand, kick that sand apart. Said, "Where'd you see that?" And, Freud was working even at that stage. And so we're sitting in the sandbox, maybe up to about 10 o'clock in the morning, playing around. And then we would have bead stringing period where you string the beads. And then she would read a story to us about some guy with an apple. And he had a pet rabbit. And that was a big moment. And then we would lay down. Did you ever have nap? Do you remember the nap scene? We would lie down, and we had cots. And they would open up the cots, and we would all lie down. And they would pull the shades down. And that would go for about 15 minutes. We're taking a nap, quote. Boy, if there's anything, even the word nap now raises the hair on the back of my neck. I hate the idea of naps. Naps. Naps are things for little mewling babes and elderly gentlemen with no teeth. Funny. And so after the nap, though, there was one big moment that came after the nap. Miss Bundy would say, "All right now, boys and girls, it's milk time." And then she would ask us a question. "Now, where does milk come from?" And a hand would go up, and Eileen Akers would say, "A moo cow." That's right. Now, Who grows the cow? Is it a fireman? Is it a mailman? Would you tell us, Alex? Silence. He had an IQ of -3. Silence. He said, oh, I see. You've forgotten. Now, how about you, George? That's George Doppler, who had an IQ of 107, but was already working to be in the mafia. George, who is it that grows the cow from which we get the milk? And he'd get this curling lip, like, oh, what a stoop. You mean you don't know that? You stupid old bag. And he'd say, what do you think, a farmer? I said, that's right, George. Now, who brings us the milk? Is it a fireman? Is it a policeman? More curling of lips. What a stupid. By the way, do you know that this is what turned me against kindergarten? I mean, I knew all this stuff cold. I mean, really cold. I knew. I mean, I just knew. And already alienation was setting in. I was alienated in my kindergarten. And all this palaver to get that crummy bottle of milk. So she says, who brings the milk? Now, girls love that kind of stuff. Girls take to the academic world, don't they, Tony? Love it. They just like ducks, you know, flapping around in the water. They love this. So instantly, I mean, Pearl, there was a chick named Pearl, squirt, black hair, Pearl, a milkman. That's right, Pearl. All right, now. Can any of you tell us just what, besides drinking milk, what are some of the things that we can use milk in? How do we use milk? Everybody knows that milk is great for spilling on the floor. You know? After all, what is it you're not supposed to cry over when you do what? And so, where is it? Well, after this 15-minute inquisition on milk, Miss Bundy would then say, all right, now, which two of you want to go and get the milk for us now? Oh, that was a great, that was a real detail. That was a good one. So you could split from this hellhole and get out of this sand pot. And I was very disappointed because always, up to the point I went to kindergarten, I always thought of school as a desk. I'd see pictures of kids sitting at a desk. And to me, I always wanted a desk. And now I'm in school. What am I doing? I'm sitting in the sand. Making a little thing out of sand. That's exactly what I did in the backyard when I was a kid. I figured, I'm through being a kid. I want a desk. And this, I was outraged. Now, I'm telling the truth. In fact, it's still a legend in our family that every morning my mother used to have to drive me down the alley with a bullwhip to go to kindergarten. She used to, you know, get down there and crack. And crack, crack. I don't want to sit there in the sand. Crack. And already I'm on my way, a protester, and I'd get down there, you know, I bucked. I mean, I didn't want all this palaver about who brings the milk, where does the milky come from, the cowie, and all that jazz. So I'm sitting there waiting for my milk. I want milk. And so she says, all right, now which one of you two want to get the milk? Well, I'm going to tell you what happened, one awful moment, terrible day with the milk. Usually it was me and Joshua. Sometimes it was Schwartz and Flick. There were, you know, there's a little group of activists in every class, and we were already starting to be activists. We were basically fist fighters and that. So one day she says, all right, Jeannie, Jeannie, why don't you and Alec Joshua, go down and get the milk? Okay, now hurry back, and in the meantime, boys and girls, would you get out your Crayolas? Down the hall we go. Now, down at the end of the hall, we would go down the steps, and down at the base of the steps, there was this place where the janitor, he had all the milk, and you'd tell him you were from the kindergarten. All right, he'd give you this carton thing, and we'd carry it up, and it had all the milk, had little pieces of ice on it, and they were the little boxes of milk. Now, what they did, every day, they would have half of the milk was chocolate. And remember chocolate milk? Do they still make chocolate milk? Half of the milk was chocolate, and the other half was white milk. And it would alternate. One day you'd get chocolate, and the next day you'd get white. And the kids would be half and half. Of course, every kid wanted the chocolate milk. It was always a great day when you'd go in. It was chocolate milk, and sometimes you'd trade. But generally, it was always, that was big. So Joshua and I have got this milk. and we're coming back. And we get about 20 feet away from the basement when Joshua says, I'm gonna drink my milk now. And he was chocolate. I was white. So he takes the chocolate milk and he starts drinking the chocolate milk. And I says, give me some of it. And he said, no. You know how kids are. So we're both carrying the thing. And he's sucking his thing with a straw. And he says, no. I said, well, I don't know why I did it. I says, I want some chocolate milk. So I reach down and I take a box of chocolate milk and I suck it up. Well, you know how quick you can suck up one of those things. Just like that. It was great. It tasted good. And cold, ice cold. So I drank the chocolate milk. With that, Joshua reaches in and takes another one. Well, by the time we got down to the kindergarten class, between the two of us, each one of us had drunk about 5 bottles of chocolate milk. And a lot of kids were not going to get any milk because each bottle had been counted. You know, that was it. And we got scared. Boy, did we get scared. We didn't know what to do. We're standing outside the door with the case, and half of it is empty. And here, you know what we did? We did a terrible thing. We stuck the boxes back in the case. You know how little kids are. They don't think. We stuck the boxes back in. They were all lined up. And we had this little cardboard box they had with handles on it. And we lined them all up. And we put the tops back on. It's the only thing we could think to do. So we took the milk in. And Miss Bundy takes the milk and she starts to pass it out. Well, of course, obviously, an empty bottle of chocolate milk does not quite weigh the same as a closed, filled bottle of chocolate milk. She says, what's this? It's empty. Me and Joshua sitting there. She says, what's this? Well, look at this. Half of these are empty. Well, she knew what happened. She obviously drunk the milk that belonged to all the other kids. Well, now, had Miss Bundy been an ACLU member, for example, this would have been her, you know, a real Spock cuckoo. This would have been her opportunity to, quote, and in cap letters, teach us a lesson which we would never forget. That's all in caps. What did Miss Bundy do? She looked at Joshua and she looked at me. She said, there seems to be some milk short today. Do either of you know anything about it? Dead silence. She says, there seems to be, and I noticed that it's only chocolate milk. Dead silence. She said, well, I'll tell you what. Jeannie, would you go back down and talk to Mr. Columbus and tell Mr. Columbus you want 7 bottles more of chocolate milk, that we are short today. And would you take these empty bottles down and show them that somehow we have gotten empty bottles? And take Alex with you. So we go down. Sheepish. And you know, the human mind is funny. By the time we got halfway back to the basement, we were both totally convinced that they had given us empty bottles. Oh, you can tell a lie to yourself so much that you ultimately totally believe it. And in fact, we'll go up on the witness stand and swear to it and actually believe it. I don't mean be a phony, really believe it. So we get back down to Mr. Columbus, and here's old man Columbus, who was the caretaker. And I remember Columbus always down there mixing ink. You know, they had this powdered ink. He was always mixing ink. We walked down, and Mr. Columbus is sitting down. I remember he was eating a sandwich, big sandwich, down in the basement. Do you remember the basement of your school? Well, there it is, our basement. And I didn't go down there too much, except when I get the milk. And so I walked down, and Mr. Columbus is sitting there. And he says, what do you want? Are you kids? Joshua said, this, you gave us empty bottles. He said, I did what? You gave us empty bottles. He said, I gave you empty bottles of what? I said, you gave us empty bottles of chocolate milk. I gave you empty bottles of chocolate milk? What are you talking about? Well, of course, obviously, the minute he saw the chocolate all over the front of my Mickey Mouse shirt, where the empty bottles of chocolate milk went. He said, oh, well, let me see those. By George, they are empty. They must have leaked out of the bottom. And he took one of them. He said, look at that, it leaks. I'll be darned. Well, and they had this big cooler over there. He says, well, you got some empty bottles of chocolate milk. He says, I'll have to tell the milkman that he gave us some empty bottles of chocolate milk. I certainly will. And I'll tell you what, I'll bet if they find out back at the dairy, they're going to fire him for that. They're going to fire the milkman. Me and Josh, we drank the chocolate milk, and now they're going to fire the milkman. Here's old Galavis. I'll bet they're going to fire him. He probably drank it. All right. Okay, let's see. How many bottles? 1, 2, 3, 4, 7. All right. He goes, I'm going to get 7 bottles. He says, take these back. And he says, now, you see, they're all filled. And you be sure to tell Miss Bundy that we're going to find out about that milkman. We're certainly not going to have that happen. You never know what's going to happen. We get halfway back. And Joshua is beginning to worry. His old man was a bread man. He knew about these things. And my old man worked at the dairy. That was the final kicker. They were butt. Because I knew, you know, that there are such things as milkmen. And I'm walking back, and the two of us got the 7 bottles, and we've got it in a cardboard thing. We're carrying it. He put them in a little box for us. Joshua starts to cry. And I walked into the room. I didn't cry. I was never a crier. I mean, even my closest friends will tell you today that I never cry. And so, well, except, I mean, unless there's some things happen, naturally I cry then. But I am not a man with a heart of flint. Right, Tony? And so, I mean, everybody knows that, but I don't cry. And so we walked into the room, and all the kids are sitting around with the Crayolas and that manila paper and thrown away. We've got 7 bottles of chocolate milk. And Miss Bundy says, well, I see you have the milk. Did you tell Mr. Columbus that we got 7 empty bottles of milk?
Yeah.
What did Mr. Columbus say? Well, tell me, what did he say? Well, am I going to have to call Mr. Columbus to find out, or are you going to tell me what he said? Now, come on, you can tell me. It's all right.
He said that milkman must have drunk it.
Well, what did he say he's going to do about that?
Well, he's going to maybe get the milkman fired.
Oh, I see. Wouldn't that be too bad? Well, after all, he did drink the milk. And it's too bad. He probably has children just like you. And he won't have a job then, will he? Well, that's just as well, because he'll have to learn not to drink the kindergarten's milk, right?
Yeah.
All right. And now, boys and girls, Merle, would you go back to the cabinet now and bring out the Graham crackers now? They always gave us Graham crackers. You remember the Graham crackers we always got with the chocolate milk? Well, here we're sitting now. I've got my bottle of white milk, and they had a chart. The way they worked it, every day they had a chart, and they had all our names down, and they would put an X after your name, say for Wednesday, meaning you got chocolate. And if you got white, they would put a check. So they kept a very close record on who got chocolate milk what days. And I'm sitting there with my white milk. Schwartz has got his chocolate milk. And each one of us have had 9 bottles of milk before this. And we're starting to go, you know, the milk is gurgling up. I mean, after all, we're little squirts. A little kid, you know, with a stomach that has a capacity of about 4.5 pints. When fully distended, now sitting there with a pop hanging out in front of him, just full of fermenting milk. I've got my milk and I've got my Graham crackers. Schwartz has got his milk. His chocolate milk, and we're sitting in the sand. He's got his Graham crackers. And Miss Bundy came over, and she said, don't you boys and girls worry, she said to me and Schwartz. She always referred to all kids as boys and girls, no matter who that was there. You know. She said, don't you boys and girls worry that it'll be all right. Mr. Columbus will don't worry, he won't be bad to the milkman, but he's just got to learn that he should not drink other people's milk. Don't you agree with that? Don't you think that it's just wrong to drink other people's milk? I mean, when other people want their milk and other people don't have the milk, don't you think it's wrong, huh? Don't you? Well, don't you think that the milkman should learn a lesson? After all, he's a grown-up man. He should know that other people, especially little children, they need their milk. And just think what would have happened had we not had some extra milk. Some little children would have gone without milk right here. Maybe little Eileen Akers.
Yep.
Well, I just wanted to tell you, don't feel bad. It's going to be all right. The milkman will probably... maybe they won't fire him. Maybe they'll... give him a good scolding.
Yeah.
And then Joshua faint. Faint! If there's anything I hate, it's a fink. A fink, fink. Joshua started to cry. And Miss Bundy said, what's the matter, Alec? Oh, that's all right, Alec. What's the matter? She said, well, what's the matter? Do you have to,
No.
Well, what's the matter, Alec? You know... I know Alec Joshua to this day. He's a grown-up man. And he still lives in the same town. And once in a great while, I meet Alec Joshua. And there are certain areas we do not discuss. And he's grown up. He's with his wife. If I ever told his wife, she married a rotten, stinking fink. Who finked. Finked. I'll tell you what he did. What's the matter, Alec? Is there something you want to tell me? She said, well, you can tell me. She said, whisper it in my ear. With that, Mrs. Bundy said, oh, he did? I said, no. She turns to me, and she said, you're a naughty boy. You are a very naughty boy. And I think you won't have any chocolate milk for the rest of the week. I sat there. And Joshua sat there. And he's sucking up his ninth bottle of chocolate milk for the day. He sat there with the biggest you-know-what type of smile on his face that I ever saw. If there's anything that a little shrimp in kindergarten likes to do, it's to see another little shrimp in the kindergarten get fed to the dragons. They are sadistic. Don't you come and tell me little kids are beautiful creatures. It's right out of, it's right out of the Lord of the Flies. I said to him, what'd you tell her? And what do you think he did? Now he's going to cry. Well, he sat there through that whole day. And I just want to tell you, that golden sand in the sandbox turned to ashes. Ashes. And it was that moment in kindergarten that I learned a lesson about mankind which has never left me. And by the way, I still am kind of cuckoo over little half-pint bottles of milk. I mean, I love them. With graham crackers. But I learned a lesson. Now, just exactly what that lesson is, I am not at liberty to divulge. All I got to say is don't get close to me. That's all. And when you are close to me, keep a sharp eye on me. I learned that he who thinks first, thinks best. Right? Bring it out big. He who thinks left gets laughed at and often fined. Bring it up, Bob.